Hey everybody, welcome to episode 15. This is the Parent Teacher Podcast, where I'm hoping people can collaborate to support all learners. I've been in a few meetings recently where we argued about accommodations and modifications, and I gave some thought as to how those are different from general differentiation. So thanks for joining me today. My name is Casey. I'm your host. I'm a former teacher. I taught special ed and general education in the Chicago Public Schools and nearby. I'm also a mom. I have ADHD. I call myself a functional hot mess, and the irony of me working with people on organization and time management is kind of funny. I currently work as a special education advocate and a consultant. So I attend meetings with families. I collaborate with teachers, and I like to bring up these conversations and topics to a wider audience so that you can also help kids reach their full potential. The whole point is using education to help kids become happy and fulfilled adults. So I'm going to start today with a quote from Carol Ann Tomlinson. So she does a lot of the work on differentiation. And I think the reason I chose this one is because there are two things that I often hear when we are not seeing eye to eye on accommodations for a kid. One thing I hear is, we already provide that. Every child has access to that. That's something that, you know, is already in place. And the other thing I often hear is, we don't provide that. We can't do that for that child. That's something the child will have to do for themselves. I can give you some examples of those later. The quote is, a teacher in a differentiated classroom does not classify herself as someone who already differentiates instruction. Rather, that teacher is fully aware that every hour of teaching, every day in the classroom, can reveal one more way to make the classroom a better match for its learners. Again, you know, it's important that we get this on paper. I'll kind of wrap that up again with the key points at the end. But if you are sitting in a meeting talking about what a kid needs and you're hearing, we already do that for everybody, and it's something that kid needs, I would say make sure it makes it on that paper. And if there is something a child needs that is an accommodation and isn't being provided, you need to push back when you hear, we don't provide that, or the child will have to do it for themselves. So I guess I'll call this episode a Set Me Straight episode. The reason I think we have disagreement on some of these topics is because everybody learns from a different source. And, you know, the rules change over the years, and I think it can be really hard to keep everyone on the same page. So it's kind of like a game of telephone. If, you know, a case manager or somebody who's leading a meeting has heard in one case, like, oh, no, that's not appropriate, we don't provide that, it kind of just stays in there. And that's why I like to have the show and inspire you to think critically and give you a little more information so that you can hopefully push a little harder and advocate for a child. So, you know, today we're saying, is this differentiation? Are we talking about an accommodation, a modification? You know, and sometimes I'll argue, you know, this is just good teaching. Like, good teachers nail a lot of the accommodations anyway. But when we have a plan and an opportunity to document what that kid needs and what works, we really need to do that. So the first term we're going to talk about is an accommodation. So what is an accommodation? I am going to use the glasses example. You know, it doesn't change what the child is going to see. It changes how that child sees it. Another metaphor I like is an image of students looking over a fence. One of the students is shorter than the others, and so they have a stool, and they are afforded the same view as everyone else by having that stool. So really, it's leveling the playing field, and it's not changing the content or the learning or the expectation. It's just letting that child have equal access to the learning that everyone else is also doing, or the teaching that, you know, that they're receiving. And so accommodations are typically what we're talking about as part of a 504 plan. And this would be a completely separate episode, but a lot of kids have a 504 plan, and that is given if you have a disability at all. So you may have a 504 plan if you have juvenile diabetes, for example. And in that plan, one of the accommodations would be that that child could be excused from class to go see the nurse, or to that child may be allowed to have another snack. That child may be given an opportunity to go rest if, you know, there's some health issues. In the case of ADHD, which is most of the kids that I work with, you may be talking about accommodations like sitting in the front of the classroom, checks for understanding, having the teacher check in and be sure that that child is clear on what the directions are before moving on. Or maybe it's posting the homework in the same spot on the board every day. It's these ways that we can support the child or change the environment to make them more successful with learning. Another really common accommodation is extended time. That one's tricky. I'm going to come back to that at the end. And another example, I suppose, would be if a child's taking a test and we know that they have difficulty with the reading, then accommodation might be given like that the child could have someone read the directions to them or read the problems for them on the math portion of the test. Because again, it's not changing the learning or the skills that we're assessing here. It's just providing access to the learning or to demonstrating those skills. So if someone's reading the word problems on a math test for a child so that they can do the math part independently, that's an accommodation. It would change if we were allowing someone to read the reading comprehension part of the test, because obviously in that case, they're doing some of the work for the child, and that is different. So a lot of those testing accommodations, you know, a little extended time or, you know, dictating to a scribe, all of these things are accommodations. So then what is a modification? Well, the modification is when you kind of cross the line and you're not talking about having the same expectation of that student in terms of learning, okay? So you're changing the task enough that that child is not being held to the same standard as the other kids in the class. And it's going to get tricky in a minute. So, you know, here's another example. You may have a class where students are researching and writing essays, and they are finding, you know, secondary sources, and they're citing evidence from three different places to support a thesis, you know, and they're doing this grade level standard. And then you may have a child who's significantly below that level in written expression or in reading comprehension. And so they may be filling out a graphic organizer or going to pre-selected articles to find evidence and to, you know, to cite that in the paper. So really, it's kind of like there's been a lot of the work already done for them. Or maybe this is in a math class and a lot of the students are working with, you know, numbers with up to 5 digits and decimals, and, you know, they're working with carrying and borrowing, or regrouping is what we call it. And you have modified work for a student that's, you know, maybe 2 or 3 digits and no regrouping when they're subtracting, because that's the level that they're currently at. And that's the expectation. And often these modifications are going to be based on what is written in a child's IEP. So if a child is getting really modified work, they're probably, you know, working from a plan that was determined with the team. So modifications, you hope that any of these changes that are made to the curriculum or to the learning are discussed as part of the team. It's kind of the team decision, and parents are often involved with that. And it would be really important to know what the expectation was for that child, so that we're not saying that child has A's or B's or is nailing that, you know, learning goal or that standard when the expectation isn't the same as the rest of the class. So, you know, how do these two compare to just general differentiation within classrooms? It's an expectation these days that teachers differentiate their instruction to meet the needs of all learners. So I think of differentiation is when you are keeping everybody on the same page-ish. You have the same end goal or plan for everyone. But in order to get them there, you have to start where the students are. So, you know, a student or a teacher may give a pretest and then put students into groups, small groups, knowing that some of them are almost there, they're almost on level, they only need a little more work, or maybe they need an extension. You may have, you know, one group that just needs a little help and then another group that needs more intensive help or even additional accommodations like reading work out loud to them or helping them to scribe their answers, things like that. So, you know, it is a challenge as a teacher to meet the needs of all students, but differentiation is just part of the teaching practice where you're thinking of creative ways to support kids and to group them so that everybody can make progress and get to those key understandings. And Tomlinson describes four ways that teachers can differentiate content. And here I can see a little overlap with accommodations and modifications. So the first way is in content. So what kids are learning based on their current knowledge, interest, and learning style. And this is really the, how deep is the learning at first? And so they talk about Bloom's taxonomy, which goes from, you know, just the basic understanding of something to being able to apply it to other learning. So, you know, some kids might start by matching a definition in a term, and other kids might be generating a definition for that term, but they're all still learning that same key content. So in a social studies class, they'd all end up taking the same chapter test, but the teacher may be differentiating that content that they're working on, you know, as part of it. The second way of differentiating is in the process that the students are learning in. So how they're learning. Are they reading material and annotating by themselves? Are they discussing this as a group and taking notes? Are they drawing their understanding? Are they writing it out? In math, could they be using manipulatives? So, you know, different modalities. This talks a bit about those preferred learning styles that kids might have. The third way that we could differentiate in a general classroom is the product that the students produce. You know, giving students a choice is always a pretty good way to get them engaged. So how will they demonstrate their learning and what does that evidence look like? You know, here's another one that could overlap with accommodations because we talked about dictating your answer versus writing your answer. You know, you could have the same learning being evidenced, but that product might look a bit different. And again, teachers, it's always, you know, a hit with students when you let them choose from making a poster or presenting a slideshow, etc. And then number four is the environment. So this is talking about the setting and the structure during those lessons, including options for movement, collaborating, or getting help. Some students are going to need a really quiet, self-paced type of environment. And some students are great with bouncing all over the classroom and talking to friends about it or working at a standing desk. You know, and this might need to be structured and kind of predetermined for students as well. But again, I think you can see how some of those accommodations we talked about, sitting in the front of the room, those kind of things can also have to do with environment. So here is where it gets hairy in a meeting, is when we start to talk about homework. Again, I work with a lot of kids who have executive functioning challenges. So maybe it's working memory or coding, you know, being able to copy from one paper to another, or it might be just processing speed. And a lot of these more, I'll call them subtle issues that kids can have, can really affect their stamina. And also a lot of kids take medication during the day to get through school. By the time they get home, it's worn off. So there are all kinds of things that can impact a child's ability to do homework. And I guess my biggest question to teachers is always, what is the purpose of this task? We know that for elementary students, homework should only be assigned to reinforce learning and to practice skills so that they can come back to school with that fluency part a little more solidified. We're not supposed to be sending kids home with the learning part to do because kids have different levels of support. And again, the stamina can come in. So, you know, I'm just thinking about homework is meant to help those kids increase mastery, right? And here is one of the biggest arguments that we have. You think about this. Is this an accommodation or is it a modification? So if you have a spelling list that goes home and every week the kids take a spelling test on Friday, you know, there might be 20 words on a spelling list. And what would be the skill that the kid is practicing there? Well, in some cases, let's say you're doing word families or spelling patterns. So I'm thinking of IGHT, light, bright, might, night. You know, really the skill is that they are spelling out that that letter pattern and adding that onset sound to it. You know, if it's two different word families that you have going on, it may be possible to reduce the spelling list, but it is a little tricky, isn't it? Compare this one to math homework. So math homework is one area I see an opportunity anyway to reduce a kid's workload. if students typically take home 20 math problems and all of them have to do with the same thing, I'm thinking of the order of operations as I look at the picture I have on the slideshow. You know, if all of the math problems are practice of the same basic skill, then is it an accommodation or is it a modification to reduce the number of items from 20 to 10 and still expect that kid to have the same level of mastery or the same percent score as everyone else? So I have some sources that will back me up on this, but I'm saying that in a lot of cases, it's very appropriate to reduce the number of items so that that kid isn't spending a really long time on it at night. And part of my reason for stating that is because really it's an arbitrary amount, isn't it? It's really based on what the teacher's assigning. So this is one of the frequent arguments. I believe that reducing the number of items can be an accommodation, but again, only if it isn't changing the learning that is supposed to be taking place. The other thing that's really important to keep in mind, especially as you are listing accommodations in an IEP or a 504 plan, is will they happen? Will they happen? And I think that one of the most frequent things I see is turning it around on the student. So, you know, by the time we get to an IEP, by the time that student has a whole team working with them on individualized instruction, one of the really common goals we put in for social emotional learning is self-advocacy. And, you know, working as an advocate, I think I can see what a process this can be. So when I hear accommodations like the child will, you know, request this, or that this is available upon request or as needed or if available. You know, if we're talking about giving somebody a copy of the teacher notes, you know, upon request, I think you really have to be careful about that. And you have to know that child and where they're at developmentally and their temperament. Are they very assertive? You know, in some cases they may feel comfortable with some teachers and not with others. So when you're choosing accommodations, know your child and do not make them self-advocate and do not expect that a kid is going to push for accommodations, especially if they don't want to stick out, and many of them do not want to. So that's my caution on that. You know, and when forcing kids to use accommodations, there should definitely be a lot of sensitivity to them feeling like they're sticking out versus, you know, blending in. So best practice would be to provide accommodations that are beneficial and accessible to, you know, anyone who needs them in the classroom. Those original examples I listed about sitting in the front of the room or having homework posted somewhere that the child can see it, really appropriate. Extended time, I think it's really reasonable that we teach all kids that if they foresee that they can't do something without a reasonable accommodation, that they should learn to ask for it. And, you know, hopefully that can kind of bleed into their adult lives, whether they have a diagnosed disability or not. My last real, warning here is that we really have to beware the trap of extended time, because one of the most common accommodations you'll see in both 504 plans and on IEPs is allow extended time. Now, for a structured assessment or a classroom assessment, you know, it might be up to 50% more. Again, a lot of these numbers are going to be arbitrary, and I understand that. But when you just grant extended time, if that child takes a lot longer to write or to process information or to complete that task, and we're extending time for maybe, you know, 8 subjects, when is that time, you know, where's that time coming from? So you really have to look deeper. And that is why I really wanted to pay attention to the reduction of work accommodation. If it takes a kid longer to complete a task, you gotta find a support or some other way to decrease how long they're spending on that task, you know, or at least try to keep this balance, because you can't just keep extending time indefinitely. I think all of you know what happens when the semester comes to a close and kids are behind. It's a lot of anxiety. The other tip I have about accommodations in particular is list what's most important first. So often on a 504, it can look like a pretty generic list: extended time on tests, seat in the front of the room, check for understanding. And I don't think that, unless it's personalized, teachers really read through it. So there have been a few examples of students I have who maybe they have, I'm thinking of kids who have oppositional defiant disorder. One really helpful tip was, let's put, you know, offer 2 choices, or, you know, phrase as a request, not a demand, on the top of the page. Because if a substitute were to come in and to read the accommodations for that child, what would they need to see immediately? What is most important? So don't bury those important ones that are helpful at the bottom of the list. You want to work on your child or that child also being aware of what's important and what to communicate to people proactively. Ideally, we work on that self-advocacy over time. But just really be careful to avoid these generic printouts that aren't really helpful to teachers. You know, we get kind of these stock lists. I've included on the slideshow, which I'm posting to YouTube and on my website, a few resources about mastery versus quantity. You can see where they cite accommodation in reduction of work on there. On the CHAD page, they also have information about 504 accommodations that talks about reduction of items of homework. So hopefully some of you find that helpful. There's an IRIS Peabody module on differentiated instruction. That's fantastic. And then also there is a link to Smart Kids with LD that has more information on planning accommodations and modifications. So that's what I have for you this week. If you have any questions or topic ideas or, you know, anything you'd like me to dig into and you want to contact me, you can find me at www.reorientedadvocacy.com. And you can also leave me a voice message at Anchor FM, which is where I record the podcast. And I would be happy to answer that on my show for you. So I hope you'll get in touch, and I hope that you found this useful. I'll be back soon. Thanks.